La 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 la. La la la. La la la.
If you want to hear your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. They talk megabytes to petabytes and cover it all. They're the Gizmo.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 112. That's the seventh show we've done from the year of 2016. And it will also be the last show of the year for 2016, despite what we said last time, a week ago. Matt and I almost forgot that we wanted to recap our prediction show. So go through our 2015 predictions for 2016, and then present our 2016 predictions for 2017. I'll tell you, Matt, I've really struggled with my predictions for 2017.
Anything can happen.
Exactly. It's, some of the outliers that we threw out for 2016 came true, and it's kind of a brave new world.
It really is.
So let's jump right into this. So here's my 2015 predictions. I had six, four of which were serious and two of which were just kind of tongue-in-cheek jokes, but both of those came true as well. My first prediction for 2015 was Trump will be president-elect when we revisit the show next year. And guess what? He's president-elect. Confirmed by the Electoral College. Yeah, you know, it kind of threw that one out. That was more of a wish than it was a...
I don't think anybody really, truly expected that phenomenon to pay off quite as well as it did.
Yeah, I mean, it was... we thought of everybody, he would probably give, you know, a good run, but it seemed that it was a 50-50 shot, flip the coin, and, you know, whether he would get it.
I fully expected him to trump the primaries.
Oh, absolutely.
But I really didn't know for sure what was going to happen in the general. And I really, if you'd have put a gun to my head back when we were doing this original show, I probably would have said that Hillary would have defeated him. But, wow, who would have expected that implosion? It's amazing.
Yeah. And at this point, we're less than 30 days away from him becoming not president-elect, but president. So that was my number one. My number two is Apple will continue to protect privacy and fight government backdoors to encryption. And yes, they have continued that promise. And they're still pretty much the only tech company out there who has publicly come out and you know, stated, look, privacy is a right, and we're going to protect that right. And despite what I guess our more progressive friends would like to happen. See, I don't like the word progressivism. I like the word Nazism.
Probably a little more accurate.
Number three. FAA regulations for drones will kill the consumer prosumer drone industry and privacy. And guess what? Their FAA regulations did. Actually, they changed the regulations so that if you are a hobbyist using it, you do not have to get it licensed now. But if you take pictures or do anything where you intend to sell the content that you create off a drone, you have to license it as for professional use. They're still selling consumer drones everywhere. It really, and we've had a whole bunch of new drones come out that are, you know, affordable. It really, this Christmas was not the drone Christmas that the drone industry was hoping for.
Well, I think, that kind of ties into your privacy argument of the previous prediction. I don't think the American consumer cares to surrender their, even their name and address into a federal database as much as you would have, as they would have hoped for, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very true. And the other thing that was kind of I want to say probably distracted from the whole thing because was the election. So many people were tied up in the election that not until the Electoral College vote happened were people even willing to spend money for Christmas. And we're actually way up this quarter, and it's been a boom Christmas pass from like the last six from a consumer spending perspective. But still, at that point, it's too little too late, particularly when you look at the fact that the retail industry does about 60 to 70% of their yearly business during the quarter that Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's fall in. So, and number four, and I think this was a kind of gimme in my opinion, because it's just human nature. Gun control will cause more Americans to purchase firearms. People who have had no plans prior to purchase will purchase them. And guess what? That's exactly what happened.
Barack Obama has been the gun salesman of the year for 8 years straight. It'd be interesting to see what happens once Trump is in office. Does that continue to rise? Does gun ownership continue to rise, or does it
plateau
and maybe? Yeah.
You know, my prediction. I'm going to make a prediction. So, my prediction for 2016 is that gun ownership will continue to rise, and it will plateau come towards the end of 2017 as people feel more comfortable and safer, and you know, some of the laws and foreign policy get changed so that there isn't this sense of sense of urgency to protect yourself. So that's my first one. And here's my two joke ones. Apple will make newer iPhones, Macs, and Apple Watches and iPads. And guess what? They did. Go figure. Company who makes technology makes newer versions of all their technology. Wow!
Unbelievable.
The other one is Microsoft will release another version of Windows with a new confusing interface, yet no actual improvements, that is no longer compatible with the applications for the previous versions of Windows. And guess what? They did. If you do the Windows 10 update, which I have a machine going through that update hell, it reboots your machine almost five times depending on what machine it is. And it takes almost a whole 24 hours if all you're doing is updates, for all the updates to be applied. So that the interface becomes slightly more user-friendly, and I mean slightly, based upon rolling the dice and going, we think this might make this more user-friendly.
I don't know. My Windows 10 experience has been pretty awful. My latest Windows 10 problem is that it seems to be slowing down the internet. It does not matter which browser I'm in. It's painfully slow. It's right. Like going back to the old 286 days. It's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. You have a 286, you used the Telnet prompt. It was pretty quick. I have three Windows 10 machines. Well, I have more than that. I have some tablets, you know, little, like I have a HP Stream 7 and a Stream 13 and that I don't really use anymore. I've got to do a purge of technology. But I have three main machines that I use. But primarily, I'm a Mac user. I have three main Macs that I use. And, you know, and I have various Linux machines. And I have a VMware server and all this other stuff. Because I have, for my job, I have to have a lab to evaluate some new technologies and things and see how solutions work together. But one of my Windows laptops, which is new, works great. But that's because I didn't have to go through the quite the upgrade hell. I did have to apply the update. And I got that one from Microsoft. So it's a signature edition machine. Didn't have any crapware on it. My Microsoft Surface Pro 3 has all these issues that Surface Pros are having. Like, it gets too hot. The battery doesn't last very long. And Microsoft, unlike Apple or Samsung and a lot of the other players, is not quick to go, look, we're going to just replace your battery, or we're going to fix this. They keep trying to do firmware updates, but, like, the Surface is really thin. And one of their firmware updates, all it did to make it less hot was turn the fan on all the time. So now it's louder than the TV set, you know? And so I'm not real happy with that. And then one is an old Dell server that I put Windows 10 on, because it's kind of, to use it, it's a server / workstation, and so it's got a quad core Athlon processor and stuff in it, and I wanted to use it for some specific video streaming stuff as a backup to my main video streaming rig, because sometimes I need more than one stream streamed at the same time from the same event. But I guess that's the first world problems. But it's funny, because if you go through the gradual interface changes that Microsoft makes when they do an update to Windows 10, you don't realize what has changed too much. But I hadn't updated that Dell box for a long time. And so it was on the previous update, and I logged into it, and I'm like, man, this is, that button doesn't look the same, and this is different. And it does seem like they change a lot of things to change things, as opposed to changing things for the better, you know. And I won't say that they're the only ones who do that, but they're the only ones who do it, and it's not better. And so that's why
I'd be okay if they would change things and it's not worse. That's,
yeah,
for me, my Windows 10 experience has not been very
well. The problem is if you are going to use Windows as your primary, you're stuck on Windows 10.
Well, yeah, and that's part of what I'm getting at. Thankfully, I have an older Lenovo laptop that I use that's so old that it didn't even have the option to upgrade to Windows 10, and I'm thankful, because that's still my reliable machine.
Yeah,
which is ridiculous, because this machine that I bought, that I did the upgrade on Windows 10, it was supposed to be my main production machine. I bought that machine to do video editing and internet radio broadcasts, and now I can't do any of that. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And nobody seems to really care about that. Microsoft doesn't care. The software manufacturers that released all that software before, they don't really care. I mean, I would think you would, one side or the other should feel like they need to help out people who got screwed.
I don't think they see it that way. It's a revenue opportunity.
Well, sure, and that's, but people like me are just going to say, well, screw it. I just want to do what I was doing before.
Yeah.
And I think there's, even if it was a discounted upgrade to software packages that would actually work, would be a step in the right direction, but I don't really see that happening either.
Yeah. Well, particularly in like video and audio production, you know, what they call a discount is kind of laughable a lot of times. Like, I'll give a good example. My son wanted Ableton Live for Christmas. He won the standard suite. It's $8.99 normal cost. Or no, it's not $8.99. That's the, well, whatever it is. It was like $5.99 or something. So they gave a 20% discount for Christmas. And he's like, that's a good deal. And I'm like, no, because I can buy Logic Pro, which will do you know, 95% to 99% of that, and main stage 3, which will do the other, what Logic Pro is missing, for like $229 full price, you know, and so you have to look at it and you go, you know, yeah, I understand you guys are in a niche market and stuff, so you're not selling to the masses. But then again, you got to look at your competition and go, well, you know, if they can do the majority of what they're doing on that, then why are we selling our products, you know, at that high? Because particularly when you talk about like Logic Pro with Main Stage 3 versus Ableton Live, you're talking Ableton Live Suite, which is their, you know, almost $1,000 package. You know, that's the old days. That was back when I first started in the music industry and video and television industry, and we're paying $30,000 and $40,000 for these turnkey Avid video digital video mastering systems, and paying $10,000 a piece for a Kaya hard disk recorders and things like that. When, you know, I will say that industry was totally revolutionized by the computer industry.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, today you can spend about $4,000 and do 20x what we used to do back then. And I was talking to my son about that last night. It was pretty funny because we were watching. He likes to watch this old, it was a public television show back in the 80s. And I can't remember what the name of it is, but it was these people, and they would talk about every week. They would have a show and they would interview people. They happened to be at the PBS station in San Francisco. And so they would talk to some, you know, tech guys, and they would come in and physically bring in machines, and they would show demos of like how networking worked. And I'm talking in the early days before, you know, the internet was ubiquitous, and you know, they were showing print sharing and email among your local area network, which was, you know, those were big deals back then. And they're showing all this on television, and they would bring in manufacturers and talk about, you know, video cards. And it was great because it was also, they would give Apple 50% of the time and x86 vendors 50% of the time. So you got to see the whole thing. And I look at the show now, and I was telling my son, I said, this show is so low budget, it has such low production values, but I love this show. But today you could take your Mac out of the box and do 40x more than what they were doing.
Sure.
And put it up as a podcast on the internet, you know,
and not need the TV station, not need all those layers of editing, not need any
absolutely
of that. Computers have brought us a long, long way towards what I would call a true freedom of the press.
Very true. Very true. So I've gone through all my predictions, Matthew. What were your predictions? One was about the Reds, if I recall.
Yeah, I think I missed that one by about 10 games. I predicted they would have a 100-loss season, and I forget where they ended up, but it was pretty doggone close. Close enough that I could say that I will predict that again, and even if I miss, it will not be by much.
Okay, I'm writing that one down for you.
I'm going to predict that the NBA will overtake the NFL as America's, I don't want to say most favored sport.
You mean most favored television sport?
Yeah.
I see. I think that's baseball.
Well, I mean, I still think America's pastime will always be baseball. I mean, it's the quintessential American game. But let's face it, we're not watching it on TV.
No. Baseball is probably the most boring sport to watch on TV, except for when they're batting.
Golf is horrible.
I don't consider golf a sport. That's a game. It's like Parcheesi.
Transportation.
It's part cheese. See, golf would be more interesting if they combine it with hockey. You know, where there's a guy out there who's guarding the hole, and, you know, they have to They have to get in there and check that guy to get their putt in. And I mean, why not? They can keep the golf the way it currently is for old men and kids who are learning. But then, you know, we get kids into pads and they have to... You know, and that's kind of funny. So as a side to golf, golf courses are finding it harder and harder to make ends meet because, you know, you're talking about particularly golf courses that have hundreds of acres because they have two or three courses are finding it really hard to make the financials work out based upon. And that's why, like, to go play a round of golf as an individual, you know, and on weekends you have to get a cart and they force you to do that. Is an attempt to make more revenue, but you know to be a hobbyist, to me it's a hobbyist sport. You know, yeah, there's professional golfers and stuff, but that's really a side effect of, you know, the guys who go out and a lot of business does get done on the golf course, and I think that's part of the reason it's become a businessman's sport, is because to pay for a round of golf is a couple $100. Two guys go out and you're in, depending on where you're golfing, it's $200, $300, $400, $500. And so, of course, you're going to want to write that off on your business account. And
it's really an infuriating game.
I'll tell you, I have a love-hate relationship with golf. I am not a good golfer. I did not play golf as a child. And that's one of the only ways to really be a good, consistent golfer is to start young and play. I did other sports like shooting and tennis and football. So that part of it's infuriating because I'm not good at it. But the part that I love is it's very casual. You know, you sit back, what other sport can you sit out there and it's okay to drink beer and bourbon all day long while you're doing it? But it does. It takes forever to play a round of golf. It's a minimum a couple hours if you're playing 18 holes. But if you're playing in a round robin tournament, that could be 3 or 4 hours on the golf course, and you're outside, and you know, and the grounds typically at most golf courses are kept really nice, so it's beautiful and scenic, and you know, you're hanging out with your buddies and stuff like that. So it's an enjoyable experience. But that's part of the reason I don't call it a sport in many cases, because most sports games, the enjoyment is because of the stiff competition and the physical exercise you're really getting from doing it. Where golf, it's more of a recreational thing where you're out there and, you know, I could easily spend 2-3 hours drinking beer and bourbon with my buddies just sitting around, not on the golf course. And guess what? It'd be a fraction of the cost.
Yeah, that's the way we need to approach that with our wives as a way of, you know, hey, we could be out golfing and spending hundreds of dollars instead of just sitting around drinking beer and bourbon at a fraction of the cost. That's smart. I had to write that one down. I use that one.
Well, I do work in sales, so you know, it's all about positioning. It's all... But, okay, so there's two. You have two. I have two. You have two.
Well, I mean, continuing the sport deal. We're finally hearing that Marvin Lewis is going to retire at the end of the season for the Bengals, and I think it matters not who's head coach. That team is horrible. They will always be an 8-8 team, if that. I predict yet another 8-8 season for the Bengals.
I'm writing that down right now. An 8-18. So I'm going to protect, because this is something I'm seeing as my new role in what I do in the industry, is that we're going to see this, and we're starting to see it now, but I think we're going to see it even, it'll become much more to the fore of things that are going on within the tech industry, and that is this whole concept of optimize and simplify. So you're going to see moves not only from your big data center vendors, but all the way down to your consumer vendors. And, you know, some of this today is, so, you know, Siri, Cortana, Alexa, you know, from I don't even, does Google even have a name for theirs except for Google?
Okay, Google.
Yeah. You know, that is a part, is a piece of that whole simplification. You know, in the tech industry, but I think you're, you know, we talk about, I don't want to call it dumbing down, but you know, Windows, it's funny. Apple with macOS 10 has really simplified the desktop experience for Mac users. It's not nearly as complicated as it used to be. To find things, you know, there's a search window like you're on the internet, so it's familiar. Like, you know, I want to change my network preferences, and I type in network preferences, and it highlights it. You click the button, and it tells you what you want. You know, oh, I want to change my proxy address, so I type proxy in the next search engine, and it goes, takes me to the page with proxy. Microsoft Windows does the same thing, but what has been odd is that they've taken functionality away from the user. So one of the things that came up with Windows 10, and this is Microsoft trying to simplify and optimize the experience for users, was internet connection sharing. You can still do it on Windows 10, but it requires you to open a command line and do it from the command line. There's no longer a easy GUI way of going in and saying, I want to share my wired Ethernet connection to Wi-Fi so that everybody in my house can use it for a wireless access point today, which in Windows 7 was one of the key features that they touted. You know, we've seen that across iOS and Android. You know, in a way, it's a more simplified user interface because you don't get down into in many ways, you can't get down into the nuts and bolts of the operating system to tweak it here and there. You know, the idea is that it is already an optimized experience that is put together via best practice. And we can argue till our faces turn blue whether that's truly the case or not. But I mean, I think they're going to even take it to a greater degree.
Until you can ask your computer to do what you want it to do, I don't know that it's ever going to be simple enough. So I was telling you that I was having issues with the internet and how slow responsive it was. I had actually thought we have two internet sources in our home because my middle stepson is doing Electronic Classroom of Tomorrow or whatever, so ECOD has an internet source in our house, and then I'm paying Time Warner crap loads of money for internet too. And I had noticed on my laptop that every now and then the Time Warner cable internet will drop out, and it will automatically connect to the ECOD, which is a slightly degraded performance for me. So that's what I thought was happening. So I was trying to get to the network preferences to find out which one I was connected to.
Yeah.
And one of the things that has happened in Windows 10 is it stopped telling you what you named your network. So like my network is named Jarvis, uh-huh. Right? And the ECOD one is ECOD. You used to be able to hover over the little network
and it would tell you
which one you're connected to. Well, now it says Network 3. Well, that doesn't tell me anything because I've moved 3 times in the last year. You know, it doesn't seem to be near as user-friendly to get information anymore out of Windows.
But I think also part of that is Windows is not the priority of Microsoft anymore. All their other applications are. Because, you know, Office is now cross-platform. It's iOS, macOS, Android, and Windows. And even their data center applications. So SQL Server is the first one, but we're going to see it happen to SharePoint and Exchange. But they now, SQL Server now runs on Linux. There's a lot of effort to go that way. And, you know, they say, they claim it's because of the cloud and moving into Azure and AWS and all these cloud providers. But in reality, I think they realize that their value was in their applications.
Then stop screwing with the operating system. Get it to work. And then leave it alone.
But see, they've never done that. That's never been their way. You know, instead of making Windows 95 good, they created Windows 98, which was a good version of Windows 95 with some major issues. You know, and ever since, my personal opinion, and another good friend of mine who's in the tech industry, Microsoft kind of peaked at Windows 2000. Windows 2000 was phenomenal as both a consumer OS and a professional OS. And as a matter of fact, he ran Windows 2000 until they brought out Windows 7, which is when they killed support for Windows 2000. And I think he still ran it for a while after that, because it was the only one of their operating systems where plug and play actually worked. It wasn't plug and pray. and everything, you know, it didn't bring in all these issues. Like, you know, XP was a nightmare as a replacement for Windows 2000. You had a stable, good OS, and they brought in, you know, it wasn't until, what is it, XP Service Pack 10?
Yeah.
Or whatever, I think they were up to 4 service packs right before they brought out Windows 7, that XP became something close to being as good as Windows 2000. I mean, you got to look at that and you got to go, huh. And, you know, and I understand. Microsoft put a line in the sand, and they said that we're going to run the same OS on our tablets that we're going to run on our desktops. And
but does it really work for either well?
Well, that was the thing. I think that when you look at Windows 8 and 8.1, it was a better tablet experience than it was a desktop experience by far.
I would agree with that.
And when you look at Windows 10, it's a better desktop experience than it is a tablet experience by far. But
that's how horrible is it for tablet if it's this horrible for desktops?
Well, one of the things, so, you know, I've been a Surface user for a long time, and I learned all the shortcut, you know, the swipes and everything on Windows 8 and Windows 8.1. You know, I liked the charm bar because, you know, you swiped left, you swiped in from the right-hand side, and charm bar came up, and you had search, and once you got used to it, it was actually pretty cool how that worked. Charm bar isn't there anymore.
Right.
You know, you have to now. When you swipe in, you get the wholly complicated menu that has not only your alerts, but also has like all your settings and your updates and all this stuff. And like you said, it doesn't quite give you the information that you used to get. And they left, but like you used to be able to swipe in from the left side, and it showed all the open applications, and then you could pick one. Well, now it wants to throw it up on the screen, as opposed to swiping them from the left side to tell you what applications you have. And one of the complaints about Windows 8 was, you know, how do you shut an application? And then as you went from the top and you drug your finger down and it closed the application down. Once you got used to it, it made perfect sense. It still does that, but also if you tap on an app, it now has an X up in the corner, you know, which is kind of superfluous. And because that line is there, it actually... from a tablet experience perspective, it's taking a smaller screen and taking up more of its real estate, you know. And yes, you can run your apps in full screen and you won't see that tab, but then you have to escape out of full screen to close it. I mean, just all kinds of weird stuff. And I don't want to dig on them too much, because I don't think Windows 10 is wholly horrible. I actually like Windows 10 better than I do Windows 8 now that I've used it longer. I think it's on par with Windows 8.1. But the things that it was good at, they kind of took those features away. And what it, this goes back to the discussion we had in the last podcast and the podcast before. So Apple's notorious for making changes that they know will upset the user base. They know. But they know it's also... they might as well adopt early because this is the way the industry is going. So in their example, because they do it on both hardware and software. So in their case, they went USB-C. My MacBook, Retina MacBook that we're recording this podcast on, only has USB-C. The new MacBook Pros only have USB-C. And yeah, it was tough 2 years ago when I bought my first Retina MacBook, which is now my daughter's. Well, it's not even 2 years ago, but a year and a half ago, 18 months ago. There were, other than what Apple provided, there were no USB-C peripherals. Today, there's thousands. Why? Because Apple pushed the limit. And yeah, do you have to buy adapters to use your what we now will call legacy USB 3? Yeah, you have to have an adapter today, and it'll be unfortunate. But in 2 years, when that crap breaks because it's disposable, and you go buy new stuff, you'll be buying USB-C stuff. Apple knew that that was going to happen. Is it really unpopular right now? Yeah, a lot. I mean, people whine and cry, well, you know, I now have to get an adapter, and whatever. That is the way of the tech industry. Microsoft had that opportunity with Windows 8 and 8.1. You know, look, we're making a break with the way Windows used to be, and this is our direction going forward. And it wasn't like corporations and businesses were going to wholeheartedly switch from Windows to another platform completely, particularly overnight. You know, that's a 5 or 6 year process if you're going to do that. And because you have to pilot what you're going to switch to and figure out if it's going to meet the needs of all your users. And then you're going to have these outliers where you'll never be able to change. And so they got scared. And they with Windows, particularly the first version of Windows 10, they came back and they go, okay, here's a new Windows. By the way, you know, Start Menu is back and all these things you guys complain about. Well, was that really moving forward or was that, you know, stepping? You made 2 steps forward and 3 steps back because, yeah, it's a better operating system in the sense that it is more stable than Windows 8 and the applications don't seem to crash as often, but you know, the position where you guys were going, you totally eroded your position and where you wanted to go.
My biggest beef with the whole pushing the user base forward is if you're going to do that, you have to make sure that software still runs on it.
Yeah.
You know, this goes back to what I was saying earlier about the video editing software. It does not run, will not run. Nobody seems to care about that.
Well,
and that's a problem.
Yeah, but you know that's one of the things between the development community and Microsoft and the development community of both Android and Apple is Apple is very active with their developer community. They have the Apple Developer Program. If you want to put an app in their store, you pay the $99 fee a year for your account, which gets you access to all their, you know, access to all the APIs and all their code and examples and all this stuff, and gives you access to put your application in the App Store free of charge as part of that $99 fee. Android, similar process, and neither Apple nor Android or Google charge for the software development kit. You can develop an app on your own, never belong to their programs, and then when you decide that I've got an app that's good enough, I'm going to put it in, you know, you can then pay your fee at that point. So they don't force you into it. Microsoft has always, like, if you want Visual Studio, it's an ungodly amount of money. They have an arrogance about the way they do development, and there have been a couple articles out this year that says that for the desktop OS platforms, more developers are developing for Mac than they are for Windows, and that's one of the things that's hurting you in this update process too. But then also, the cost to develop for Windows is so much higher, even though you have a much greater audience to market to. But you know, when you're a niche program maker and you're making video software and you're competing against other vendors, that's really hurting you. You know, and now it's not just other vendors; you're competing against other platforms.
Well, part two of what my issue is that had I been given a real choice, upgrade or not to Windows 10, I would have not, knowing that the software that I was told was going to work was not going to work. I mean, Microsoft flat out lied.
Yeah.
I mean, you cannot do that. I would venture to guess that there's enough users that are in that boat that there should be a class action lawsuit.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know where you're going to see it as.
But, sure. I guess my point on that is that if you're going to force people to do something for something they shell out hundreds of dollars for, you, one, better make sure that it works, and two, you'd better be honest about what doesn't work.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on from Windows bashing.
Which is funny because I'm a Windows guy.
I know. So what's your number four prediction, Matt? Last one.
I'm fully expecting Donald Trump in his first 100 days to eliminate at least one federal agency. I'd love for it to be the EPA or the Department of Education. Or even the Department of Energy. Something's got to go.
That's a biggie.
It's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
I don't expect that one to actually happen in the first 100 days.
But
I would really like to see that happen in the first year.
Okay, so is it 100 days or first year?
I like to push the envelope.
Okay.
You know, I mean, we can take partial credit.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that's something I would like to see. My favorite would be to get rid of, like, Department of Highway.
Seriously, the Department of Transportation is useless. It's useless.
I can understand the State Department of Transportation, but I don't really understand.
With the way that the federal government is managing the interstate system, it's pushed off to the states anyway.
Exactly. So the GAO could just manage the financial aspects of giving the money to the states and let the states manage it.
Which is, in all reality, what's happening anyway.
Exactly.
So why do it?
Yep. But that's a bold move, Matt. We'll see how that works out come December of 2017 when we're sitting here. Maybe not in this exact place, but we'll be sitting somewhere. So I'm trying to think of what my I don't know that I have any more predictions for 2017. That's everything's so up in the air. Oh, I do. And it's related to the federal government will determine one way or the other how they're going to handle the EV car refueling industry. Because unfortunately, I don't see this as something that the free market's going to... the free market will affect it. The answer is already there. It's not going to happen.
See, I find that less likely because Obama's gone come January. And I think he's going to be the type that would push solutions like that and force solutions on the American people. I don't think Trump is going to care so much about that.
Oh, I agree.
And once the EPA is
but
gone,
I said either way.
Well, yeah. Okay, fair enough.
Lack of action is...
Is action
nonetheless. Is action nonetheless. Because, you know, for the it's the chicken and egg
quandary. It really is.
So, you know, and I will give this. I have a lot of respect for Elon Musk. You talk about somebody who is both a visionary and when he says he's going to do it, he does it. And I like that. it was kind of funny. I was listening to another podcast, and they suggested that what we ought to do is we ought to find issues that will annoy Elon Musk, so he'll just go fix them, like, you know, the search engine and Netflix, you know, to find movies that you actually want to watch and stuff like that. So, but you know, and I know he's trying to do his best with providing the home charging solutions and all that stuff, but that still does not get you on interstate highway, which is really where, in order for the EV industry to really take off, meaning that you get a rising tide and you suddenly get this break where they're making enough vehicles that the initial cost of purchase goes down, you know, to where it's on par, if not less than your traditional combustion engine cars today. And you know, and that's going to be a fight with the oil industry too. Because I'll tell you, the oil industry doesn't make a lot of money on the oil, but the gas station industry does not. They make their money on selling, the concessions. Exactly. And they only make a couple cents, if that, per gallon of gasoline that they sell. So, you know, if somebody can come in, even in the free market, and figure out how to make that work. But you're never going to get like a BP Oil America or a Shell or, you know, these major, because they're, you know, they all have lip service to, yeah, we're doing these renewable technologies and stuff, but they're the oil industry. That's like going to Cargill and saying, hey, we want you guys to switch from making
corn syrup.
Yeah, too. Corn syrup to...
See, I think if Elon Musk were smart, he would team up with, like, McDonald's and put charging stations in at every McDonald's.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because that's everywhere. The infrastructure's there. It's just a matter of putting in the station.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that they have not addressed, which I think is really funny in the EV market, because usually this is a way to kind of build your rising tide, is they have not addressed the commercial use. It's much easier, you know, to become on par price-wise on a commercial vehicle, you know, a short-haul cargo truck, you know, like those box trucks that deliver,
sure,
you know, food to restaurants.
Yeah, there's one right there.
Exactly.
That just drive around locally, that go from distribution center to these places and back.
Has even the hybrids penetrated that market?
There was a little bit that had done it, and there's some propane. I've seen propane be more. I've seen more of those trucks run on propane than I've seen hybrid. But I know that there was a little bit of hybrid action going on. But I thought that was more of a test than it was a. But again, you know, that's going to be my other one. Is EV market moving? It kind of like the commercial drone market has really gotten bigger over the last few months because. Well, partly because of the FAA, but because it's much easier for commercial endeavors to purchase what is considered at least a high-dollar item because they have special requirements, and those requirements are getting buried into the cost of that high-dollar item.
We don't put out cinnamon at this place.
So, How do you think I scored this year, Matt?
I thought you did fairly well.
So would I get an A?
I'd have to.
So I got a 4 point?
Yeah.
Awesome. I would give you a 4 point, but you can only remember one of your predictions from last year.
Well, no, we did accurately. I think we both accurately predicted that Trump would kill on the primaries.
Yeah, we did.
I don't think anybody could have foreseen the Hillary implosion, so I can't take credit for that one. As much as I'd love to.
Well, we'll hold off your grade. You get an incomplete for this year.
We'll have to go back. I know I wrote mine out last year, and I'll have to go see if we can find out.
Well, like I said, I didn't have time to go back and listen to the podcast from last year to see what it was. And then Paul's weren't in here, and Paul's not here, but Paul will be joining us for our next episode of Gizmo Sapiens. So that should be interesting. It sounds like he has something to say, is what I think.
Oh.
Yeah, because he's like, I just listened to the latest episode, and you know what's missing? Me.
So, love it.
Well, we want to hear from you, our listeners, so please send us email, snail mail, video mail, whatever, to gizmosapiens@gmail.com, or leave us a post on our website at www.gizmosapiens.com, and we will see you in the new year and on the digital flip side.
Listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.